We've got Dr. Vince Scapatura on the line to unpick some the new military adventurism coming out of the LNP federal government. Hello, Vince, how are you?
Oh, I'm very well, thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
Yeah. Very weird. It was a very weird rearrangement of the chess pieces last Thursday when Prime Minister decided to announce the nuclear-powered subs and a new alliance called AUKUS. I don't know if I've said that right. AUKUS?
AUKUS is the way it's being described, the acronym, yes.
AUKUS, which is a bit like a prehistoric bird, really. And it's the forever, he's talking about the, you know, the forever alliance. What's this all about? It's really very strange.
It was strange. It was very surprising. It was quite extraordinary that this was presented to us Australians as kind of a fait accompli.
Yeah.
There was no discussion or consultation or parliamentary scrutiny. There is going to be a plan over the next 12 to 18 months to discuss how to implement the decision, but no discussion about the decision itself. So in that sense, I think it was highly anti-democratic. It was extraordinary that Australia and the US and the UK were able to keep this under wraps for so long. They've obviously been planning this for several months, if not longer, and there were no leaks about it, which is quite unusual. So I did think it came as a surprise in that sense. But on the other hand, it's just a trajectory that Australia and the United States in particular have been on for quite some time now, an ever-increasing integration between Australia and US militaries, increasing integration into strategically in terms of operational concepts, military operational concepts that Australia and the United States forces train, and just most recently in the Talisman Sabre exercises, for example, which ended in August this year. Although the United States and Australia and the UK tried to present this as not directed at any particular one country, it's very clear that this is all about China.
There's a couple of things that I wanted to bring up. It doesn't seem to me that it's actually necessary for Australia to be more bound than it already is. It's already been our Navy and our Air Force and all the rest of it. Despite what the rhetoric of keeping our borders, it's about our national security and all the rest of it, we've been completely suborned by the American project.
Yes. I mean, there's more to this than just the nuclear-powered submarines. That's the most important part of the deal, but it's not the only part, or the announcement, I should say. There are other parts to it too. But just if we focus on that for a moment, why does Australia need nuclear-powered submarines?
That's right.
I mean, why the switch from diesel to nuclear power? It's an extraordinary. We should acknowledge first it's an extraordinary shift.
Yeah.
Australia will be the first country to possess a nuclear-powered submarine that isn't a nuclear-powered a nuclear weapon state. Only nuclear weapon states have nuclear-powered submarines. The United States has not shared this technology with any other country except Britain, and it did that all the way back in 1958. And even maybe 5 or 10 years ago, it was unthinkable that the United States would share this very, very sensitive technology, or any nuclear-powered state would share this kind of technology with any other state. So it's extraordinary in that sense. But, yeah, the question is, why do we need nuclear-powered submarines? Well, nuclear-powered submarines are superior to diesel ones because of the range and the speed at which they can deploy.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for defending the continent, the Australian continent, then range is not so much of an issue.
Yeah.
But
so it's
a cover. If you want to send your submarines right up to the coast of China in the South China Sea, and you want to loiter there for a couple of months, well, then you need a nuclear-powered submarine to do so. So it's very clear that this is one part of a whole series of decisions, announcements that Australia has made over the last 10, even 20 years, but particularly the last decade, that is about augmenting America's power with respect to its rising tensions and conflicts with China. And in fact, that's exactly what the senior defense officials who briefed announcement had said. They had said that this nuclear capability, which we are providing Australia, will augment Australia, US capabilities.
Now, there's so many things in there. Like, it's so undemocratic. It's such a huge announcement. It's undemocratic. Also, it's against the principle of no nuclear. This just opens a huge can of worms. There's a whole range of other things too. There's been quite a lot of American-oriented discussions coming out of places like La Trobe University that focus on Indo-Pacific.
Yeah,
and they've set up a place in Western Australia, in Perth, right? The Americans are focusing on that side of the continent as opposed to the more populous side of the continent. So it's obviously American interests rather than Australian interests we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, China does not pose a serious high-level military threat to Australia, except in the case of a US war with China, in which China would undoubtedly be targeting US forces on Australian soil in the northern and western parts of Australia, where US forces are in fact concentrated. And of course, the other element of this is the Pine Gap Intelligence Facility in the heart of Australia, just outside of Alice Springs, which would undoubtedly be crucial for US war fighting, not just in China, but really anywhere in Asia or the Middle East. Incidentally, although the US alliance is considered to be and has for a long time the cornerstone of Australia's security, at least with respect to China, it's only because of our strong alliance with the United States, with our integration with the US military in very profound ways, militarily, intelligence, as I've mentioned before, in terms of training and operational concepts, China might see a attack on Australia as something with which it might plausibly consider. Mm. Otherwise, there is no prospect that China would undertake a unilateral military strike on Australia in the absence of a China-US war in which Australia was supporting the United States, in which American forces were being projected from northern Australia.
And I've got to remember that it's the US that is a predator. China has, maybe in its very long history, had overtaken places like Vietnam and, washed over its local, closer regional countries, but it isn't. And Tibet, I suppose, but it considers the places that it's actually annexed as being part of China. So they don't, you know what I mean? Like, they're not expeditionary, as it were.
No. As China hasn't been at war with another country since the late 1970s, Vietnam. The United States, in comparison, has been at war almost every year with several countries since the Second World War. But that's not to say that there are not concerns about China's rising power. It's a militarization of the South China Sea, the disputes that it has with its regional nations, its internal policies, internal repressive policies with respect to Hong Kong, with respect to Xinjiang, with respect to Taiwan. These are all concerning, but I would agree when the Australian government and the US government calls on China to demilitarize the South China Sea, for example. But notice that the calls are only for unilateral demilitarization. They're not for mutual demilitarization. There are two large powers that militarize the South China Sea. China is one, the United States is the other, and it has been the overwhelming dominant military power in East Asia and in the Indo-Pacific for quite a number of decades. China is understandably feeling vulnerable, does not accept that it should succumb to hundreds of U.S. military bases, war gamings on its borders and around its territorial seas, hundreds of intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance missions, which it considers to be provocative and preparation of the battlefield in in preparation for war, and it's attempting to kick the United States out of its local air and maritime approaches with, you know, integrated air and missile defense systems, these asymmetric capabilities. And the United States doesn't like that. It wants to be able to project its military power to every corner of the world uncontested. And so the kinds of weapons platforms that it's investing in, and the kinds of weapons platforms, in fact, that Australia is encouraging Australia to invest in, and which we are investing in, are, and the war games which we're participating with the United States, as I mentioned earlier in Talisman Sabre, are all about attempting to re-establish U.S. military dominance in this part of the world.
Yeah, yeah, because they're practicing island hopping and small incursions, yes. Right? That's what they're... That's,
right, yes, yeah. Yeah. So this is in response to China developing largely, you know, short and intermediate range ground-based missile systems, which make it much more difficult for the United States aircraft carriers and other force projection capabilities to project, you know, within several hundred kilometers of China's coast. And so the United States military is undergoing a huge transformation at the moment in terms of operational doctrines and weapons platforms and so on, in order to penetrate and disintegrate, in the words of the U.S. Army, and disintegrate armies at China's kind of protective defensive area access area denial bubble, which is what the terminology is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Australia is being roped into this. And these nuclear submarines, they are nuclear powered submarines, are very much a part of this. Just way back in 2013, an influential U.S. think tank, the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments, produced a report urging Australia to purchase nuclear powered submarines to assist the U.S. in a war against China. And they detail a whole plan about the way in which Australian nuclear-powered submarines could be used to, you know, impose a distant blockade on China or to hunt Chinese submarines. So this has been on the cards for a long time, but I didn't think anyone actually expected Australia to take this dramatic action, certainly even a few years ago. So it's important and astounding development.
Morrison, his motivations are quite interesting. They're completely self-serving, always self-serving. It's funny, you know, because before the Iraq War, I remember thinking, and that's a long time ago, I remember thinking, the Cold War edifice has fallen, so they'll have to create a new bad guy. And I remember tossing it around in my mind, thinking, well, it's either the Middle East or it's China. Oh, they're too frightened of China, so it has to be in the Middle East. And so basically place the bet, if I was going to place a bet, you know, 20 years ago living in Fitzroy and know that this was what was going to be the outcome, then obviously this complex issue that Morrison talked about. I mean, he bandies around these words like, I want to make it clear this is complex, significant and comprehensive. But, of course, it's light on figures. And the business about, we're starting again after spending $90 billion on with a deal for a French company that was renowned for its shady deals.
Yes, and you know that number didn't start off at $90 billion.
No,
it was going to be much more than that probably.
Yeah.
And these new nuclears, the Prime Minister has already acknowledged that it will likely these new nuclear powered submarines will cost more than what had been assessed for the conventionally powered submarine.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons why Australia didn't go with the nuclear option in the first place. There's a whole host of reasons, but one of them was a huge amount of cost. And the fact that, as I mentioned before, all other powers that have a nuclear-powered submarine program have a civilian nuclear defense industry and also have nuclear weapons. So this has real implications in terms of proliferation of nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we're not acquiring nuclear weapons. But the uranium, which is used to power the nuclear-powered submarines, is in fact bomb-grade, highly enriched uranium. So Australia will have to take delivery of these reactors with this highly enriched uranium from the United States and use it to power its submarines. There's always been a loophole in the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which allows the safeguards and monitoring of highly enriched uranium to be avoided if there were to be used in a non-explosive device, primarily a nuclear-powered submarine. But it's never been tested because no country, no non-nuclear weapons country has ever used a highly enriched uranium for a nuclear-powered submarine program. And so there are concerns that this will open up a loophole for other non-nuclear weapon states to then say, well, we need to develop highly enriched uranium because we want to develop nuclear-powered submarines, and then that could be a very small step away from going from once you have the highly enriched uranium to then getting a nuclear bomb. So it has implications for nuclear proliferation as well. And, of course, it sets up the prospect of a regional arms race. South Korea and Japan have both in the past indicated a willingness or a desire to produce nuclear-powered submarines. So this is not a precedent which is increasing stability and security for Australia. It's the opposite.
It's funny too because it's like a huge slush fund because 2040 is 20 years away.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because on the one hand there's this unprecedented danger, this very immediate threat that we are facing apparently from China. There's been talk about, Australia's kind of 1930s moment and yet at the same time, if the threat is so great, why are we able to wait, 20 years before we perhaps receive our first nuclear-powered submarine?
Yeah.
So there is a bit of a mismatch.
It's a setup. They're setting. They've been doing a lot of work, talking to all those various countries like India and Japan and South Korea. And I mean, there's been quite a lot of manoeuvring around this whole exercise of increasing Japan's military capacity, or a whole range of things been going on over a number of years. But there was this other thing that's slightly off center, which is to do with the UK connection. Now, when the UK went out of the EU, it's now become completely obvious that all the things people said about its inability to actually run a reasonable economy because it's outside the EU, has actually happened. Like all the things that they said, they don't have enough truck drivers, they can't sell their produce, blah, 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 right? Yeah. There's a whole range of things. And I remember going to a big end of town thing around how Australia, before it all happened, that these people were gleefully talking about how Australia will have a free deal arrangement with England. And it was because the English were acting as if having deals with countries like Australia and a few others would offset the EU debacle, right? Is that the same thing that's going on here when we've got this weird, UK-US alliance? What's that all about?
It is very strange. I think there is, as you rightly commented, the decision of Brexit was a shot in the foot for the UK, a self-inflicted wound in terms of its global economic and power. And I think this deal is actually a further indication of the UK's kind of waning global influence. The fact, as I mentioned, that the United States is now willing to share with Australia what it only ever previously had shared with the UK is a recognition that the United States sees Australia in the 21st century in the same way that it saw the UK in the 20th century as a kind of a bridge with which to project power, not in Europe, but in this case in the Indo-Pacific. In fact, that same report that I mentioned before, the CSBA report back in 2013, which was urging Australia to purchase nuclear-powered submarines, amongst a whole heap of other upgrades and investments, which interestingly have in fact come to pass in terms of infrastructure, airbase upgrades and so on, which we can talk about if you like.
Yeah.
We don't have enough time. Yeah.
But you're completely right.
Yes, that same report argued that Australia in the 21st century is perfectly suited to become America's most special relationship and to serve as a bridging power into Asia.
Or as I like to call it, an American suburb.
Right. Yep. An adjunct to the United States. And again, the United States would not share this type of technology with Australia without some kind of quid pro quo. I think there would be a huge expectation that Australia would participate in the kinds of military activities in the region that the United States would expect after sharing this very sensitive technology with Australia. And of course, it further ties Australia to the United States for generations, because unless we build our own civilian nuclear industry, and that is a danger. I mean, it could be a slippery slope that way. So that's one thing to think about. But if we don't, then it means that we are reliant on the United States to maintain, to service, and to provide us with their nuclear reactors for this very important part of our defense infrastructure for generations to come. So that, in a sense, it further undermines Australia's sovereignty and independence.
Well, we have to finish it there. We're right up to the wire. But we'll talk again, Vince. I find this absolutely riveting.
Absolutely. More than happy to come on again.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you.